Hello and welcome to the podcast, 10 Lessons Learned, the podcast that makes the world a little wiser lesson by lesson. We uncover wisdom for career, business, and life to an international audience of rising leaders. In other words, you'll find valuable insights that you can't find in the textbook because it took us years to learn this stuff. My name is Jeffrey Wang, the founder of Professional Development Forum and your host. Today, we're joined by Dale Stevens. Dale Stevens is an actress from London who discovered her passion for acting from a very young age. Her journey took her from London to Sydney to New Zealand and now back to Melbourne as she pursued her love of the craft. One of the pivotal moments in Dale's career was landing a role in Mission Impossible, where she portrayed an assassin in front of famous US actors. This experience taught her that her best work happened when she was most afraid, which led her to make friends with her nerves. Dale founded Playwright to teach others to use acting techniques to navigate their way through life intentionally. Over the past 11 years, Dale has worked with lawyers, accountants, governments, entrepreneurs, telcos, and budding speakers. It turns out that there are ways of behaving that are common to us all, as Dale says. Human behavior drives economics. Welcome, Dale.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Well, I'm very excited to have a famous actress with us for the show. So tell me, what was it like working with Tom Cruise?
Yes, a common misconception. It was Mission Impossible, the series, the real version.
Oh, the real Mission Impossible. This is the one we grew up watching with the match and the, you know, dun, 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 dun. That one?
Yes. Yeah, so it was an extraordinary experience. But yeah, with the nerves thing, I was really absolutely terrified, mainly when I was doing a scene by myself. Mm-hmm. I was working with the other actors. You just work off their energy. But I was doing this scene. So I don't know why I was so scared. I was sitting in a hotel room by myself wearing a red leotard with a gun, planting a bomb. What could go wrong, right? A lot. And when I was watching it back with the other cast members, as my scene was coming up, I was sitting there terrified that it would be awful. And here I was in front of them, but it went brilliantly. And that's because of technique. So technique is king. Nerves don't matter. It's technique, technique, technique.
Brilliant. Which I'm sure we'll get into in the course of the interview. So how about let's just jump straight into your 10 lessons then. Lesson number one, do yourself.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. I'm an actor and I've created all the techniques from acting techniques, yet I really didn't embrace the acting part. I used to hide behind it and not really mention it a lot until I've done this new rebranding with this friend of mine. And then now I'm just like really embracing it and people get me more and they get what I do more because I go with what's so different about me. And so often people, I mean, you look at consultants, they just all look the same and they don't bring what's special about them. All accountants look the same. Lawyers look the same. IT people look the same. Everyone looks the same. But if you can really embrace who you are, people love that and they remember you and they have a personal connection with you and want to work with you.
Now, that's very interesting because as an actress, aren't you supposed to be playing somebody else?
Well, you are, but what you're doing is actually acting isn't about pretending. It's actually about tapping into deep universal human truths that relate to everyone. That's why my work works for anyone because people relate to people. So it's actually hunting for the truth in the situation. So, yeah. I'm not a big fan of fake it till you make it. I think you want to be it till you become it.
Oh, I like that. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit later. But in terms of doing yourself though, like what's the moment when you realize that, I suppose, that being you is, you know, is the best way to be? Because, you know, as young kids, I remember, you know, we were all very self-conscious and we want to do was to fit in. So what gave you that sort of aha moment where you realized that you needed to just be you?
Well, I think is that that's what I do with the people I coach. Mm-hmm. And then I got coached myself by a brilliant man and he was giving me some great ideas and some strategies. And he said, you know, you have to do this first. You have to lead the way. And I was like, what? No, I just help other people do it. And he said, no, you have to do it. And that really put the pressure on me. And I thought, if I can't speak to crowds, if I can't be who I really am, then how am I supposed to get other people to be able to do it as well?
Good stuff. All right. Well, lesson number two, and I think it's somewhat related to lesson number one, don't try to do better, do different.
Yeah, look, I think this is a critical part. The thing is, I was a dancer before I was an actor, and I love training. I really, really love training. But especially with public speaking, people say that practice makes perfect. Now, that is accurate, but practice makes perfect. So all your bad habits, you're practicing. So if you just keep practicing the same old thing, then you're just going to flatline. But there's a thing called deliberate practice. That's when you've got a coach. And so what I'll do is I'll give someone a little bit something different to add in and then something a little bit different to add in. And so you end up with a trajectory that you end up, you do keep doing different until you're just supremely better. So it's either, it kind of goes like this, either you're kind of flatlining because you just, and you're ingraining, embedding those bad habits in what you're doing, particularly with public speaking. It's why sometimes people who are really established public speakers are really boring because they're just ingrained in those habits. But deliberate practice means you're doing something a bit different all the time, and that's how you end up better.
Okay, so I think that you're talking to a mindset of how you sort of better yourself, and especially in this context of public speaking. So rather than trying to sort of emulate a, you know, just a sort of idealized version of yourself, you're trying to just improve certain elements until it becomes you, does it?
Well, I think you have to change what you're doing. And really, you need someone to be able to coach you who is going to be able to give you techniques. It's like a coach for basketball. You can keep dribbling the same way or shooting the same way, and you can keep practicing that, but you're just not going to get any better. But if you have a coach that is giving you new techniques, new ways of doing it, and then you're doing different things all the time, then you're going to get better. So I think the critical thing of you keep doing the same, you're actually not getting better. But if you have to start doing something different to improve.
Okay, so I get where you're coming from. So you can't do better until you do something different. And so it's part of, stepping outside of your comfort zone. Awesome. All right, lesson number three, the truth will set you free.
Wow, this is the big one. And I think we're challenged today because a lot of people talk about relative truth and my truth and your truth. And what they really mean by that is my story and your story. Everyone's got a different story. Everyone's got a different background, different personality, which is really precious and special. But the truth is truth. The laws of physics, you know, they're the truth. For me, it's Jesus Christ and his death and resurrection. That's what my life is based on, that truth. So I think that there are specific truths. There are truths about you, about your core values, about your core strengths. These are truths that will set you free. But if you start playing around with the truth, and then I think you're in big trouble.
100%. And this is one of my biggest bugbears. I'd hear people talk about my truth all the time. And what they're really talking about is my perspective. And yes, it's important. Everyone has a different perspective, and you know, and we should all try and grapple with how other people see the world. But ultimately, there is, and I think you alluded to before, there are universal truths that people share. There is something that we all share is common to humanity and the human experience. And once we embrace that and accept that things are the way they are, you will live a much happier life, I guess, knowing that there is the absolute truth that we're all orientated towards. So how did you come to learn that lesson?
Well, a thing that I think is really interesting is that we all want to belong. And I heard the other day that someone mentioned about Australia and saying that we have the spirit of rejection in Australia, and that because we're initially convicts here, and that something really need to overcome. And I think that plays into the whole concept of acceptance of people. But a lot of times acceptance goes into accepting all sorts of behaviors or accepting only some people. I think that there's a big piece around acceptance that we could really embrace. And really, at the end of the day, we are one species. Human beings are one species. We all belong to that. And I think that that's something that we can base everything on.
Oh, 100%. I mean, having lived in different countries and different cultures, I certainly have experienced that there are shared humanity amongst us all. What fulfills us, you know, and you talked about how people want to be accepted. They want to belong. They want that security. You talk about Maslow's hierarchy. I mean, that's pretty much the same across all cultures. Yeah, there is that common analogy across all people. Yeah, and I 100% agree with that. But I guess what I struggle with is, you know, being in the show business, in that sort of industry, especially nowadays, yeah, you kind of see the culture that there is, and there's almost a bit of a sort of, you know, there's almost a bit of a counterculture that's going on. You know, it makes it rather difficult for people of faith to work in that industry, don't you think?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. But there's no question. Really, when I was acting, I was really lucky because people weren't so vocal about all these different views. Really, if you're an actor, you're part of the family. I mean, I remember when I was coming back from drama school in London and coming back to America, and I met all these actors in New York, and they were just like, "You're an actor, great. Oh gosh, I invite you here, invite you there." And so you were just immediately a family. Whereas these days, if your political views or your religious views or your views on virtually anything disagree with other people, there's just so much division. And I think that where Hollywood's been sort of really, Hollywood's in trouble, really, because it's just specific views. Really, the whole point, as I said at the beginning, is that acting is supposed to be touching deep universal human truths so that we all can relate to each other and we get this, expands your experience, your human experience. That's the point. So if they're pushing certain ideologies and stuff like that, that's not how you do it. It's not how you do it. And so I think that it's too ideological and not really deeply human enough at the moment. I think it's very problematic.
Yeah. And the proof is in the pudding, right? In that a lot of the films nowadays, a lot of these productions that's been pushing these ideological messages that are anti-human, I suppose, or not aligned with a common human experience. It's no wonder that my kids don't relate to Star Wars the same way I did. You know, because Star Wars was a hero's journey, ultimately. It's about a young farm boy overcoming his fears so that he can triumph and rescue his friends. And ultimately, it's not about Luke being a man. It's about Luke going through a hero's journey and overcoming his fears. Whereas I think the new series of Star Wars basically is a what we call a Mary Sue, you know, an overpowered character that has nothing to overcome. And as a result of that, you know, people don't have the same, they don't identify with the film. They don't feel strongly about the film. And as cool as the special effects are and lightsabers and all that, my children just don't have the same love of Star Wars that I remember back in the days when we were growing up. And these pieces of art has to speak to something deeper within us that we know to be true for us to really enjoy this.
I think that's so true. And also what I've noticed is with all the Marvel movies, they're so juvenile. You know, good against bad, that's it. It's they're so juvenile. I remember when my son was growing up and he used to always dress up in Ninja Turtle outfits or Spider-Man and all that. And I said to the kindergarten teacher, I said, "Do you reckon that's okay? What's going on here?" kind of thing. And she said, she researched it and she said, "It's good because when you're small, you think in big pictures, not nuance." And he's relating to good and evil. And when you're 5 years old or four or whatever, that's great when you're small. But as you grow up, you're supposed to have discernment and nuance and be able to go, "Oh, there's good and bad and there's bad and good. And okay, well, how does that play out?" There's a quote, and I think hopefully I can do it correctly. It says, "There's so much good in the bad people and so much bad in the good people, it's best that we don't judge any people."
No, there's definitely wisdom in that. And I agree with it. I think sadly, because we want to avoid conflict, we've steered away from these difficult conversations. How often do you hear, don't talk about religion or politics? And what we have is an entire generation of people that is incapable of grappling with different difficult issues, difficult conversations. And as you mentioned before, people can't even be friends with you if you don't share the same views or beliefs, or you voted the wrong way. I mean, that's not a sign of wisdom. That's a sign of being a juvenile. You can only grapple with the world in black and white, which sounds like a five-year-old, right? And I think as we grow up, we need to develop that ability to understand the world as it is. And that's, as you said, various shades of gray and nuance.
Yeah, and there's also a concept which I really like is this concept of holding two opposing worldviews in your head at the same time, two opposing ideas. And I think that if you can do that, it's really a sign of maturity. And actually, one of the most interesting conversations I've ever had. So I was, you know, full confession, I was handing out how to vote cards for the Liberal Party. And I was there and there was a young guy who was handing out for the Labor Party. Now, so I'm over 50, female, carnivore, Christian conservative, okay? He's like about 35, so he's young, male, Muslim, vegetarian, Labor voter. Mm-hmm. And we had the best conversation. So I started off going, well, what's so great about Labor? And he go, oh, this, this, that. And I go, well, what about this, this, this? And we said, what about that, that, that? And we had this amazing conversation. It was just how I think conversations should be, because there was no emotion in it. There was no judgment in it. We were just going, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about that? And I think that that's what we're missing. I think that we need to have many more conversations like that. We're just throwing ideas around. I think it would be great.
You don't know what you don't know until you become curious, right? And I think probably the key to the polarization is to become curious around the other side. Why would people come to these conclusions? And I think once we understand each other, then you realize that maybe perhaps, you know, there is some value to the other side, and you can become a more informed or form a better opinion after learning all that. And so, and this is actually a very interesting, I think, philosophical discussion between many of us who are hosts at 10 Lessons Learned. One of the lessons that we've heard before was that sometimes there's no other side to the story. And I'm of the view that there always is. And even if there isn't, even if it's just the 1%, you need to seek it out. Because as soon as you start dismissing the other side, that could be a road down somewhere that you really don't want to go. We probably have more that we share in common than what divides us. And it doesn't always have to be team sports. We don't always have to barrack for our colors. A lot of the times it's seeking that common humanity that will eventually lead us to, I think, a much better place. So that was a little bit of a diversion from our lessons, but you know, nevertheless, the truth will set you free. Lesson number four, you don't know what you're capable of.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. And that's what I see with people I work with. Mm-hmm. You know, this one woman, she came to me, she was so nervous about speaking in front of people. She came at a rash at her own wedding. So this woman was terrified. She was brilliant. She was at the big superannuation company, doing brilliantly, head of sustainable investment. When she introduced me to her colleagues, she spoke really fast, fiddled with her hair, and was just awful. But then I worked with her, and then she nailed this international industry panel, got quoted in the magazine. It was her photo. She was quoted, nailed that. Then she got her company to be one of 30 companies represented at the UN.
How did you make her do it?
How did I make her do it? Well, I taught her techniques. So I taught her posture so that her posture wasn't working against her. I got her voice to be powerful rather than weak. Mm-hmm. And I gave her a structure for the panel so that she could stay on track. I crafted her opening. Well, I help. When I craft people's speeches, I actually take their words. I find out that what they're saying and then use them. So her opening line for the panel was, because I like them to talk about philosophy. So she started off saying, at First State Super, our philosophy is all around members first. Mm-hmm. We're investing $90 billion worth of their money, and it's important that we do it sustainably. Mm. Pretty good opening.
There you go. Yeah. Right. And that gave her the confidence to go and tackle something that she was petrified of.
Yeah. So we had the opening. I gave her the structure and she stayed to that. But it's also with the body language. I gave a resilient body language. I got a voice happening and then the structure. And she just nailed it. She was interviewed and did a video interview. She nailed that. She found her voice and her way of being, her professional way of being that was consistent with obviously how she had performed her job over these years. But she took that confidence and that ability into speaking on video, into speaking on a panel, and into speaking in regard to the UN.
And so that would have elevated her to even higher heights, I guess. Yeah. So well done. Lesson number five, life's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, I'm a natural sprinter because being an actor, you're either on set and so you're just hanging around a lot and then you've got to be on set and pitched on in theatre. You're just like on for 2 hours in the day and that's it. But yeah, I had to learn to pace myself. And I think it's actually a series of marathons because you start out a new project or something and it's all great and it's near the end when it's really hurting and the lactic acid is building up, where you want to give up. And that's when you push through and the great things happen. But that's when a lot of people give up.
Right. So, but I guess what's your secret for pushing through? Is it a case of just becoming more mentally tough and just push yourself through? Or is there like a greater purpose that you've got to aspire to, something that intrinsically motivate you?
I think you have to be intrinsically motivated, no question. Extrinsic motivation is never going to work, really. So I think partly it's having that the end in mind and being a bit of a dog with a bone. But the other thing is realizing that life is a mind game with yourself. So whatever it takes, you know, wake up at 4:30 in the morning or stay up till 2 o'clock in the night or when you need to. Know yourself so that you actually and pace yourself. I think it's the pacing is really, and know where you're at along the project. So, okay, as it gets near the end, it's going to get harder and harder and harder. So awareness of where you're at and knowing who you are, I think is really important too.
Oh, indeed. No doubt it's tough, right? I've never done a marathon, but a friend of mine has, and they speak about how it's only towards the end when it really plays with your mind because you're in so much pain, so much suffering that, you know, everything in your body is just telling you to quit. But it's that persistence that eventually gets you there. And it's such a mentally tough battle. And quite frankly, it's probably more important to be mentally tough than to be physically fit when it comes to marathons. So interesting insight.
It's so true. And in business, often before a breakthrough, you can be like that. I mean, last year, I was just getting really frustrated with what I was doing. And I knew that there were aspects of my business, not my actual work, but the business side that really weren't working. And I was really frustrated and it was driving me nuts. And I could probably feel that lactic acid kicking in. But that drove me to get this new branding and everything. So that, I mean, if I hadn't been so frustrated and been driven, then I wouldn't have had the breakthrough with the branding and everything. So that it's a series of cycles of that sort of thing. But you've got to go, okay, this is lactic acid. This is not like, well, maybe I should go and do something else.
So life a marathon, not a sprint. It's also about not giving up after just a short time and don't expect to be an overnight success, because anything that's worth doing, you know, you have to put in a lot of effort. So there you go. Lesson number six, all the world's a stage. I can really sense an acting theme around this whole, all the lessons.
Yeah, well, the thing is we're always acting. And what I'm always saying is that most people act unconsciously, just reacting to their present surroundings or their past experiences or their limiting beliefs and the same old patterns. And that's why with my programs, Playwright, it's about acting consciously, because you can actually create your own character. You can create what you're doing, where you're going, the whole thing. Once you start getting conscious and intentional with what you're doing. And I think a lot of professional development is based around this area. You know, you're conscious with your timing, you're conscious who's around. I mean, I think Playwright takes it just a bit more into your physical self, your body language, your voice, your intentions in every interaction with people. But yeah, we're always acting, we're always playing roles, but sometimes we're playing roles that we don't really want to play. You know, you don't really want to be playing the victim. You pretty much don't want to play the victim. That's a loser role, you know? I mean, it doesn't mean that you can't share hardships with people, but maybe you're playing the role of a supportive colleague or something like that, or a trusted advisor can share things when things are tough, because sometimes you sharing those tough things can be helpful for your clients. So it's not that you don't ever share things that are difficult, but you don't want to be playing a victim.
No, I understand. Yeah. So what I take from that is you approach your life, and I can kind of draw inspiration from a conversation I had with a cultural expert, right? So certain cultures, their life is acting. It's all acted out. In fact, that's probably what we're thinking. I'm thinking more Italians or Greeks, or even South Americans, you know, people who have a very expressive culture where you don't just live your life, you act it out. Everything's a drama. They spoke about this experience where they go into a bread shop in France and never get served. Everyone else sort of pushes in front of them, because she was from a much more reserved culture in Ireland. But all she had to do, she figured it out, that she had to just march in there and basically put the bag down and say, "I'm here," in Italian or whatever language she was in. And when that happens, then she got served. And so it's really interesting how your environment does react to how you act. And I really like the word you said, being intentional about it. Because yes, whatever we're doing day to day, we are always playing a role. And being intentional about that gives us that success. But also to pick you up on your point about not playing the victim, because victim is a role. And what you choose to play does become your reality. And when you choose to play a victim, guess how the world is going to react to you. Now, I understand completely when you say sharing your hardships and opening up on that does help with being authentic, you know, being honest. Maybe you can clarify this for me. How do you be authentic without being a victim?
I suppose it's, what do you want the outcome to be? Now, if you're fishing for someone to comfort you or someone to feel sorry for you, probably someone to feel sorry for you, then you're probably down the victim line. But if you're doing it to share something, to get closer to that person, if you're doing it from an education point of view, that you're trying to share something that would be helpful for them, then it's going, if your intention, everything's about your intention. If your intention is to get a stronger relationship with that person, rather than them fulfill your need of feeling comforted, then chances are that you're not going to be in the victim role. You're actually, and it's, I think it's often, you're focused on the other person and on the relationship.
I think you nailed it. You know, if it's about yourself, then yeah, that's when you're turned into a victim. And if it's about helping others, then yeah, there you go. All right. Lesson number 7, other people don't know what you know.
Ah, yes. So I'm a firm believer that this is the biggest barrier to communication, is that it's so hard for us to think, to not realize that other people don't know what we know. So, I mean, especially if you're speaking to someone who has similar background or similar knowledge and experience to you, and you think, oh, they know everything I know. And then you sort of start from there and kind of go to a higher level, whereas really you almost can't be too basic when you're speaking. And there's a beautiful concept which says, when you're speaking to an audience, to never underestimate their intelligence, but never overestimate their knowledge. And I think that that's so beautiful, as you can be real, you just don't treat them like idiots, but you can be really basic. I've worked with lawyers where, and I've said, you know, what did you get most out of with work with me? And they said, the most basic things I do, just about body language and just about keeping their chest up and the power pose and their body language, that is the most basic thing that I work with people, and that's what they love the most. So don't assume that people pretty much know anything about it. I think there's 3 groups of people in any room. People who know nothing about what you're talking about, okay, it's something new. People who know a little bit about it, and so they can be reminded. And the other is people, if they know masses about it, they can look deeper, be encouraged to look deeper at it. So you never have to worry about how much anyone knows.
And that's very important. And I myself have fallen victim to this. I assume that everyone knows everything I know, and anything I know is probably general knowledge that everybody already know. And quite often than not, I find myself quite blown away by things that I thought would be basic. And yet, an interesting test to do is this, and you might consider yourself an expert in, say, acting, in the world of acting, but how often do you find things that you think you ought to have known and yet you know nothing about? And that's what I find myself in, that even as someone who's a proficient in the field or maybe even an expert, there's always stuff that you can learn. But at the same time, what I really like about what you said, never underestimate the audience intelligence, is that you're not condescending in how you put that across. I mean, yes, you're there to share your knowledge, but you're not there to lecture them. You're there to ensure that they need to know something, and you want to pass that knowledge on. And I reflect on a recent experience where I was sharing, a piece of, essentially about how to communicate effectively in what I believe is some pretty basic techniques. And I was just blown away by how many people that came up later and thanked me for sharing something which I thought everybody should know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And look, even if you're talking about the exact same technique, you're doing it from your perspective, which is different already. Mm. So you just never have to be worried that what you're saying is not brand new or whatever. And my clients don't really like it when I say it, but I say, I want you to imagine you're talking to an 8-year-old child. And if you're doing that, then you're probably doing your pitch right.
Indeed. And it's not because they're stupid. It's because you want that clarity in your communication. And when you can simplify something, that simplicity is the ultimate sophistication, right? Knowing how to communicate something to an 8-year-old requires you to have such a deep understanding of the subject matter and be so clear in how you express it in order to be able to do that. So I actually think that in itself is a very essential skill to have. So yeah, so that's something that I'm very, very a big fan of. So other people don't know what you know. I like that lesson. And on that theme of communications, lesson number 8, your body language tells you who you are.
Ah, yes. Most people understand that, your body language communicates to other people, and that is massively important. There's no question about that. But what's so interesting is that actually the body language talks to you as well. And so if most times we're a bit slumped, and if we slump a bit further, then our brain can go into that fight, flight, freeze. We want to run away, or we want to brace, we want to fight it out, or we're just rabbit in the headlights. And so our body language is telling our brain how things are going, because your brain is in the dark. And so just by lifting up your chest, just by thinking taller and calmer, just by grounding your feet, you're telling your brain that you are resilient, that you are in control, that nothing's going to bother you. Also, I've got this technique, which is very unusual, which is about an acting technique about animal characteristics. And so that's all around like a swan, which is elegant, poised, gliding. So if you see yourself as a swan, then you will start acting in a cool, calm, collected way. Then there's the horse, strong, powerful, confident. Or you can be the dog, friendly, easygoing, playful, which is probably my natural personality. I have to calm that for business. And then it's the cat, which is kind of unpredictable and aloof. And so you can use these animal characteristics to be more versatile in situations. But then again, if your body is actually being versatile, then you see yourself as an adaptable, versatile person who can absolutely handle anything.
Yeah. And the reality is that your surroundings react to you too. So it's almost a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. When you go out there and behave in a certain way, that's reflected back to you. Exactly that. And then it probably gets into a positive feedback loop, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, you've got all the confidence in the world. So great advice. And I'll also relate that to watching my kids playing basketball in the game. Body language, you can really tell the morale of a team. You speak about that, but the reality is that you can tell if they're already beaten by the body language. And quite often than not, the game's outcome's not determined until the final buzzer sounds. But however, you can give up long before that if you send the wrong message to yourself and also to your opponents. So definitely very important lesson there. Lesson number 9. Now, you mentioned this before. Human behavior drives economics. This sounds like something, this is actually quite unique. And I must admit, I don't really know what you mean by this.
Okay, so how you show up, everything that you do and how you do it, what drives all your results. So economics is not just financial. Economics is in your relationships, in the mastery of techniques, absolutely all the results in your life. So economics encompasses all that, is all driven by your behavior. It's driven by how you use your body, how you use your voice, how you create relationships, how you manage those relationships. Everything you do and how you do it is what drives the results.
Okay, that makes perfect sense to me. As a sales representative, that's 100% it. You know, a lot of it, essentially, I mean, yes, there's products, there's price, but ultimately people buy from people and how they judge your offering. Yeah, the sales rep has a massive influence on how you represent your organization. So yeah, 100%, I'm with you there. That brings us to our final lesson, lesson number 10. And this sounds like a reference to a computer game. Choose your avatar.
Yes, well, it's very interesting, the story of Meryl Streep. Because Meryl Streep, when she was in high school, she had mousy brown hair. She was very nerdy, had glasses and braces, read a lot, hung out with the nerdy kids. And for whatever reason, she decided that she'd like to be the homecoming queen. And she had a very different vision for her life than the way it was going. And so she decided to get rid of her glasses, to have her braces taken off. She bleached her hair with lemon. And she played the role of the popular girl, and she even took on certain characteristics that popular girls were doing, and she became the homecoming queen. She dated the football star, and she created a character for herself in a very short period of time and became who she wanted to be. And I just believe that we can all do that, because I think that as we grow up, we are formed in relation to our surroundings and how to get those relationships to work for us and all that. And then as we become adults, I think that we can really choose every aspect of our character to be aligned. To be authentic to me is being aligned, so that your body language, your voice, what you say, how you say it, where you go, what you do, who you communicate with, who you hang around with, everything is all aligned. And if you start choosing those things, then you become truly authentic and truly you.
Okay. So I think I'll relate that back to when you're saying becoming intentional about it. But I guess I'll just play the devil's advocate here. It sounds rather manipulative, doesn't it? I mean, the thing is, it's an age old, people say that they fake it till you make it, you know, and I know you're not, you mentioned before, you're not a fan of that. So how do you reinvent yourself without seemingly just manipulating? How do you remain authentic to who you are and yet somehow just change the way you project?
I think life is a mind game with yourself. And so I think you just choose. But it's like a child learning to walk. You want to walk, and so you stumble and you just try stuff on for size. You know, you just speak in a certain way, act in a certain way, and go, well, is that really me? Do I want to be that? And you just, by trial and error. And also, as you said before, it's a loop with other people. If you like the way they're responding to you. I had an experience with John Voight, the actor, the Academy Award winning actor, brilliant actor, worked with him in New Zealand, unbelievable experience. And we were working on this scene. We're doing lines together. And during it, he said to me, oh, you should do comedy. And I thought, what? I should do comedy? You shouldn't be saying that. You should be saying I should be doing Shakespeare, and you should be taking me back to America so I could do Shakespeare with you and Al Pacino. What do you mean I should do comedy? And I was just really thrown by it. And then I thought, well, is that how I'm coming across? Am I just so light? I mean, I love to make people laugh. I adore it. But I was doing that all the time. And I just thought, well, you know, in my private life, that's fine. But professionally, I don't want to be someone who is funny. I mean, I'm not a stand-up comedian. I don't want people to just laugh all the time, because you can't have two that you really taken seriously. So I think that you can watch how people respond to you. And you know, I mean, maybe if I wanted to be that, if I wanted to do comedy, or I wanted everyone to laugh at me all the time, that's what I wanted, I could have embraced that more. So I think it's just this constant experiment where you're watching how people respond to you. And if you don't like it, change something about you. Don't try and change them.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So what you're saying is that it's basically just a part of growing up. You know, it's a process where you grow into it. So being intentional about that choice allows you to essentially grow as a person. And being intentional also allows you to grow in the direction that you ultimately want to head in life. So yeah. That is wisdom indeed. So it's not necessarily, we don't think of it as a manipulative, you're pretending to be somebody who you're not, but you're actually growing into somebody who you want to become.
Yeah.
And I think that's a much better way to look at it. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you for that. So that's the last of the 10 lessons. And you know, as we do as a tradition here at 10 Lessons, we love to throw our guests a curveball. And what we do is we ask them, what have you unlearned in your life? So something that you believe to be ironclad truth when you're starting out in life, but then later learn that it's just complete bollocks.
I think goal setting.
Goal setting. Goal setting is a waste of time, or is it just not working?
I know. I've tried it so many times. And yeah, look, I think it does work for some people. It definitely works for Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's, you know, he's like nailed the goal setting. Like every year, apparently he set goals and he achieved them all. So if that's your personality and it works for you, fantastic. But if you're an artistic spirit like me, I'm so driven to get better. I'm so driven to kind of excel in business. I'm driven to create phenomenal results for the people I work with. I'm driven to do all these things. I like creating great habits and great ways of working. So that the process drives me. I love training. I love the process. I love getting better. So the goals kind of just, yeah, don't really work for me.
So what would you suggest? Just don't set goals?
Well, I don't know. I probably should set more goals. But I think know yourself. And everything comes down to know yourself and create your own life. Either life creates you or you create your life. That's it.
So long as you're intentional about creating that life, you don't need to stick to hard goals and sort of feel bad about not achieving it. All right. Well, that's definitely a piece of wisdom there as well. So thank you very much. It's been the most pleasurable talking to you. You know, always fun to talk to a creative. You know, as I've always had an interest in the performing arts since my uni days. It's you know, it was something that I from a very young age that has a massive impact on what you could do with your life. So thanks for sharing all of that, and thank you for being on the show, Dale.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure. I love the way you go deep into topics rather than just float on the top. So thank you.
Thanks. And we will finish on that note. You've been listening to 10 Lessons Learned, the podcast that makes the world a little wiser, lesson by lesson. We're joined today by our special guest, Dale Stevens. This episode is produced by Robert Hossery and sponsored by the Professional Development Forum. Don't forget to leave us a review or comment. You can even email us at podcast@10lessonslearned.com. That's podcast@10lessonslearned.com. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so that you don't miss an episode of the only podcast that makes the world a little wiser, lesson by lesson. Thanks for tuning in, and stay safe, everyone.